Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. Today, we go to the NFC North to talk about the 19th-ranked Detroit Lions and the 17th-ranked Minnesota Vikings. Akiva, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was so great. Jets won a game, probably their last one of the year. Mets won three games.
That's a good weekend. The Twins won four in a row at Baltimore.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, well, but do you expect people to care about the Mets?
The Mets are basically where it's at nationally right now. All anybody cares about is the Mets.
Yeah, around the trade deadline, that was definitely true. But, you know, so how do you think about the NFC North? You realize it's going to be a lot of me talking about the Vikings today.
Yeah, everyone's sick of the Vikings, but I do have a soft spot in my heart for the non-Bears teams in the NFC.
So you like three teams in this division?
Like, I there are three of my favorite non-Jets teams. Like, I've always liked the Vikings. You know, feel bad, 0-4 in the Super Bowl. Bad things seem to happen to them at inopportune times. The Packers, like, they're good. They're one of the few good teams that are semi-easy to like, unlike, you know, the Patriots or the Ravens or the Steelers. And, you know, the Lions are a sad sack team that we feel bad for. Who do you have, like, an AFC team that you root for?
I really don't. I've always been annoyed by the fact that because Peyton Manning hasn't won Super Bowls, people judge him negatively compared to, like, Tom Brady, for example. So for that reason, I rooted for the Colts and then the Broncos, especially in the playoffs when he was playing, because I wanted him to get his just due as the greatest football player of all time. I'd say that my sort of soft spot teams in the NFL are probably, I guess, the Eagles a little bit, just because the Eagles are similar to the Vikings in that they're a team that's always good, that's always competing, and that finds a way to lose, you know, in the late rounds of the playoffs. But their fans are so obnoxious that, you know, but it's interesting because I lived in Philadelphia, I went to college there. And unlike every other city I've lived in, New York and Boston, et cetera, when I lived in that city, I hated those teams more because their fans were so obnoxious. I mean, the best example is Yankees Red Sox. Like every good American, I hated the Yankees so much that I, you know, mourned in 2003 and I rejoiced in 2004. And I could never possibly fathom a scenario in which I would root for the Yankees against the Red Sox. But then when I lived in Boston for 3 years, I realized that Boston fans are so much worse than New York fans that I started rooting for the Yankees against the Red Sox in those 3 years. And the Giants against the Patriots. You know, I drank champagne to celebrate when the Giants ended that undefeated season for the Patriots. But then after law school, I moved back to New York where I was surrounded by obnoxious New Yorkers again. And now I find myself rooting for the Red Sox over the Yankees. And I even rooted for the Patriots over the Giants in their second Super Bowl, which is kind of hard to believe because everybody hates the Patriots. So that's a long way of saying that when I lived in Philadelphia, I didn't hate the local teams, which is unusual because their fans are jackasses.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, Philly fans are sort of the most infamous, right? You know, throwing batteries at Santa Claus. And
I feel like they get a bad rap. They care. The teams that should be infamous are like Chargers fans. And I'm not going to say anything about a certain South Florida team because then I get hate mail.
Yeah, you did get some hate mail on that. I have to say, we should be careful. What you say about Philly fans on a podcast can come back to bite you. Do you listen to WTF?
Like only if there's like a really good guest.
Yeah, so Zach Woods, you know, he's the guy from Silicon Valley. And you know who he is?
Sure.
Yeah, so Zach Woods was on there talking to Mark Maron about being from Philly and being sort of a softer, more gentle soul. And he made reference to the Philly sports fans being terrible people. And it caused, like, it became a big media story in the local papers in Philadelphia. And Zach Woods' family was, like, being, like, besieged. And so he had to, like, issue a statement and, you know, an apology. So, but
yeah, stop taking yourself so seriously, Philly sports fans. Don't do that.
Yeah. And you know what? You're assholes. So,
you should take that as a source of pride.
Yeah, and I rooted for you guys anyways, you know, so you can be an asshole and still get sympathy. It's just the problem with Boston fans and New York fans is it's this conceited assholedom. It's Bill Simmons used to talk about the 5 year grace period. When you win a championship, you can't complain for 5 years. And as he has admitted, no one has violated that more than him and fellow Boston fans. They won, what, 8 championships in 7 years. All 4 of their teams in the major sports won a championship and they never stop bitching about everything.
Yeah, the world is against them, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody hates Boston. But yeah, everybody hates New York. And it's funny, the NFC East is there's no team in that division that isn't hated by most football fans, right? I mean, the Cowboys, we haven't even got to the Cowboys, but everybody hates the Cowboys also.
Yeah, like a lot of people that would be, like all 4 teams would be in their like bottom 5.
Yeah, that's so unusual, isn't it? I mean, there's...
But those are 4 of the biggest media teams, and like that division is kind of a unique division.
Yeah. All right. So on that note, let's get it started. Let's start with the Lions at number 19. Okay. So on that note, with us to talk about the Lions today is Jordan Acker. Jordan, how are you today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're pretty good. So, you know, 19 seems sort of an unfair rank for a team that went 11-5 last year. which was their best record since 1991. But I think the record was a little better than the team's performance. They had the Pythagorean of about a 9-17. Part of that is they went 6-1 in games decided by a touchdown, including that crazy win in London against the Falcons. And the offense actually took a step back from where it had been under Jim Schwartz, and it was really behind the defense, which was, you know, had been middle of the pack and all of a sudden was a top three defense last year and was really incredible and kept them in a lot of games. Yep. And it was basically the best Lions defense they'd had in 50 years. But now that they've lost a couple of, you know, one big name in particular off of that defense, I think that's part of why Akiva and I have them a little bit lower despite that 11-5 record. So how do you feel about that 19th ranking in the preseason?
I think it's pretty fair, actually. And I think you have to kind of go back to how unbelievably lucky this team was last year. I mean, we're just, you mentioned the London game against Atlanta. The last play of that game perfectly captured last year's Lions team. Coaching incompetence bailed out by worse coaching incompetence on the other side. It's pretty incredible, actually, that this team ended up 11-5, and so much of it was on that defensive front four. I mean, I can't say enough about how good that offense or that defensive line was, starting with the Ndamukong Suh. But it's lucky. I think 19. It's pretty much accurate as to where they are.
So you're not a Caldwell fan necessarily.
Well, no, not really. I think that there are two plays for me, and one is, you know, one that's been talked about a lot, is of course the third and fourth down in Dallas in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the best place to start whenever you're talking about Jim Caldwell. So if you're talking about football strategy, and you guys, please go ahead, correct me on this. You got a third and short and you throw the ball, you better plan on going for it on fourth down.
Yeah, Caldwell's a very conservative guy. I personally, that frustrates me a lot in coaches. Obviously, all the advanced numbers show that it's almost always beneficial to go for it more frequently than teams do. And
that's right. But the play call makes no sense then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because if you're willing to throw it, yeah,
it's nonsensical. And frankly, I think they got bailed out a lot by the front four on defense last year. I was looking through the starters this year in the secondary, and to be honest with you, all I have in my head, and I know we've gone through all the advanced stats, but I remember these guys getting burned over and over and over again. Glover Quinn in the secondary, Rasheen Mathis, Slay. I mean, these guys got absolutely lit up if quarterbacks had time to throw. The lucky thing for the Lions in 2014, of course, was that quarterbacks didn't have time to throw.
So switching over to the offense for a second.
Sure.
You know, as a Jets fan, I was, amongst the first to see the national coming out party for Ameer Abdullah. And we usually start with a quarterback, but, you know, Matt Stafford is pretty entrenched in there. Everyone seems to be talking about Abdullah. So there are a lot of bodies back there, Theo Riddick and Juke Bell. So, you know, fantasy-wise, this is the most relevant position. So let's start here. What do you see going on in the running back position?
It's a really interesting position, actually. So Joik Bell is probably going to be at least penciled in as the number one to start the season. But Abdullah, I mean, we saw what the guy could do at Nebraska. He's definitely someone to look out for. I think it's going to be really interesting, actually. And everyone talks about this, and I hate to switch from the running back, but it's so important to this Lions team is being able to throw the ball, especially in short yardage situations also. Eric Ebron is actually the most important thing to the Lions running game, other than the offensive line, obviously, and we should have a discussion about that. But last year, the Lions were terrible running the football. I think they averaged something like 87 yards per game on the ground. In order to improve that with a young offensive line, they're going to have to be able to throw the ball. And so I would say that having Ebron, having a better year from Golden Tate and Pettigrew is going to be really important as well. But they got weapons in the backfield. They got weapons really all over this team.
I think it's interesting because they have so many weapons on offense, so many, you know, big names like fantasy names, for example.
Sure.
I think it leads people to sort of think that the offense is better than it is. Matt Stafford, I think he's really sort of been riding on that incredible 2011 season for a while now. His numbers have basically gone worse you know, for 4 years in a row. His completion percentage, you know, was basically under or, you know, at or under 60%. His yards per attempt, you know, is no longer above seven. His TDs have sort of settled into the low 20s after having like 41, I think, in that season. And, you know, part of it, you can say, well, Calvin Johnson was injured last year, but right. Golden Tate put up, I think, like 99 catches and 1,300 plus yards in his absence. So the issue wasn't you know, Megatron's injury or Golden Tate. I think the issue was that they didn't really have any depth beyond those two receivers. You mentioned Ebron, who wasn't he like the number 10 pick in the 2014 draft?
It's and, absurd and he, how and many he did, picks and he, they've wasted on tight ends.
Yeah, I mean, he did nothing last year. And so, you know, you said that you think the running game starts with the passing game. But what kind of depth are they going to have after those top two receivers
It's true. I mean, the big problems for Stafford weren't just the fact that he wasn't throwing the ball as well, though it was definitely true. The big problem was also that they started this very different offense under Joe Lombardi last year. Didn't help. He's had multiple coaches. I think he's on his third or fourth coaching staff at this point. And that can't be helpful to a quarterback's development. I'm not sure that I'd put that all on Stafford. I mean, he had an offensive line that wasn't great last year. And, you know, yes, he relied in previous seasons on Megatron to kind of bail him out. But again, you know, with this Lions team and the way the NFL works these days, you have to be able to throw the ball. And so, again, I go back to this offensive line. I mean, you look at the Lions offensive line this year, it is very, very young. I think it's the youngest in the National Football League, which means that – but they're also talented. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they drafted Tomlinson. Finally, they've gotten rid of Dominic Raiola at center. So they should be more talented. I don't know if they're going to be better, but they're more talented on the offensive line, and that should definitely help Stafford this season.
Do you think Stafford's the same guy as he was in 2011? I mean, do you think those numbers are repeatable under the right offense?
I do. I think they are. I'm not sure that they'll get there with this coaching staff, but I think with the right coaching staff, I think Stafford is there. I mean, Stafford's in kind of this weird group of quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, where you're not quite sure if they're great or not. And I think Stafford kind of falls on the very good end. You know, he's not necessarily elite, but under the right system with these kinds of weapons, I mean, he's got Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate. There's no reason why he shouldn't be able to put up those 2011 numbers again.
Yeah, I think personally, other than those two, you know, four-game playoff runs, I'd rather have Stafford than Eli Manning.
Well, that's because you're insane.
You'd rather have Eli, really?
I would. Maybe it's just being a Lions fan, and I think this is probably something to get into later as we talk about this cursed franchise. But for some reason, everything that touches this team turns to crap. And I wonder if Stafford is just kind of cursed into being a very good, not great quarterback, you know, who may put up gaudy stats every once in a while in the mold of an Eric Kramer or Scott Mitchell. You know,
I hope he's better than them.
But you know what, Scott? I will tell you this. This is such a tangent, but Scott Mitchell actually put up huge stats when he was the Lions quarterback. Though
yeah, I remember the Vikings were the biggest team competing with them to get him from the Dolphins, and I was pissed when the Lions got him. But in hindsight, he ended up. Yeah, his numbers were pretty good for his era.
Yeah,
but they had Herman Moore. I mean, Johnny Morton. I mean, they had a lot of you know, weapons on at receiver.
And you forget, of course,
also
the greatest running back of all time.
Yeah, well, yeah, that helps.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt.
Well, look, you've mentioned the cursed franchise. So, you know, before we turn to the defense, let's talk about that for a second. Ugh. I mentioned that last year's 11-5 was the best season since 1991. Right. What's even more incredible is 1991 is the last time they won a playoff game. 1991 is the only playoff game they've won since 1957.
Correct.
So, you know, you mentioned it's a cursed franchise, but people don't really talk about the Lions the way they talk about the Browns or the Bills or you know, the Vikings or other teams. So why is that?
So let's just talk about for people who aren't familiar with the Lions' cursed history so they can kind of understand this. The Lions are the only team in the National Football League to have a player die on the field during the game, which is – you laugh. It's just a horrifying story.
Yeah,
they had their promising left guard prospect get killed while mowing his lawn. They had their other guard who was in his second year in the league, Mike Utley, get paralyzed.
They had two players paralyzed in the 90s alone.
I mean, it's
right. Reggie Brown. What's his name? Reggie Brown. It was the last game of the season. Nobody talks about him.
And then you're also talking about a team that was so incompetent that they chased the greatest running back in the history of the game away from football forever instead of trading him to the Dolphins, then tried to get money back from him.
And he is still loyal to the franchise, which is really impressive.
It is so incredible to me.
He's a nice guy.
And you know what the craziest thing about this franchise is? Of all of that I've mentioned, and I think that's a lot of crazy stuff. The craziest thing about the Lions is the Lions were purchased by the Ford family the same day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Ooh.
So you can see where this is going. So the question you asked was, you know, why don't we talk about the Lions as a cursed franchise? And I think a big part of it is that first of all, Detroit and Michigan is really a college football state and a college football town. I mean, this is a state that fills 175,000 seats every Saturday, and the ratings for the Lions are very, very good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the Lions sell out every week Ford Field, even though they haven't won in 60 years. But I think a lot of it is because Detroit has had such success relative to the Lions in other sports, whether it's the multiple championships of the Red Wings, although they were bad for a long time, or you have the Pistons' 3 titles, you have the Tigers' run of success over the last decade. People kind of forget about the Lions, but make no mistake. I mean, I'll tell you guys a story at the end of this podcast. We'll save it to the end. The Detroit Lions are one of the most poorly managed franchises in the history of American sports. I mean, make no mistake. They've probably chased away 2 Hall of Famers in the last 20 years. Probably, Sue, I don't know what will end up happening, but of course you can talk about his off-the-field impact, but his impact on the field was pretty staggering for a player who played defensive tackle. And I guess that's a good place to transition to the defense, huh?
Yeah, I do think, you know, one more thing with the offense. You know, Alex was talking about, you know, who the third receiver is. But if I was facing this team, you know, Johnson, Tate, the Abdullah Bell combo, and if you throw out Pettigrew and Ebron, if one of them ends up really having a big year, it's still kind of a frightening, you know, array of options for Stafford.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, and a big part of it, though, is just how does this offensive line come together? I mean, when Stafford has time, he ends up being a very good to great quarterback, but he didn't get that last year. They haven't really had stability, really, for talent for a long time on the offensive line. And that's going to be a big, big part of it, whether this team can actually gel this year.
Let me ask you one more question. You were talking about, before we turn to the defense, you were talking about, you know, how it's a college football state with Michigan and Michigan State.
Yeah.
And even, I think, among the pro teams, almost every city with an NFL team, the NFL team is the number one team in that city. And in Detroit,
yeah,
you know, I really don't think – I think that the Tigers are more important. I think for different segments of the community, the Pistons and the Red Wings are both more important. And all three of those teams have had a lot more success, obviously. The only other city in the NFL I really think of where the NFL team is definitely not number one is St. Louis, where the Cardinals are clearly above the Rams. And look, the Rams are leaving town. I mean, there's a couple others I thought about, like, you know, the Texans, the Falcons, but those are just, you know, like, Atlanta's just not a good sports city in general.
What's your criteria? Can you say your criteria again?
I was saying where the NFL team is not – the fans of that NFL team have other pro teams they care about more.
Yeah, well, both the Jets and the Giants definitely are both in that category.
Oh, not the Giants. No way. I have
the Yankees.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, obviously the thing in New York is you have, like, you know, I have a lot of friends who are Mets, Jets, and Giants, Yankees, but I know a lot of people who are different orders, you know. Like, we know the Bednarsches, for example, who are Mets, Giants, and there's Jets, Yankees, and they're owned by the same.
Sure, team, so. The Giants and the Jets are a clear 3 and 4 in the city.
There's no chance the Giants are behind the Mets. Excuse me. The Yankees are number one. I'll concede that.
Oh, no. The Mets have more fans than the Giants. The Mets have more fans than the Giants. No question.
I think you guys are forgetting a big one, by the way. And this is this is just because they're a joke. Bengals, the New York Knicks.
Oh, yeah. The Knicks have way more fans. I was about to say this.
Nobody's cared about the Knicks in 15 years.
Doesn't matter. They have more fans than the Jets or the Giants. So, who split them?
Okay, well, yeah. So the Knicks.
The Knicks don't split anything. They have the whole city.
That's right. So the Knicks have that one advantage over all the other teams, but basketball is still. Well, anyways, but the point is that Detroit definitely. I think you know the Lions aren't even number two. They're probably, you know, they're definitely behind Michigan or Michigan State, depending on your collegiate allegiance. And I guess I want to ask Jordan, we had on the Jets podcast, we asked our Jets guests to rank, you know, what was most important to them. And one of them, for example, mentioned, I think he had Mets number one, Jets number two, Arsenal number three, and then wife and kids were number four and five.
Nice. Well, I'd like to keep my marriage alive, so I'm not going to clue them on this. But I'll say, so for me personally, you know, Michigan is in my blood. I'd probably put Michigan basketball and football first.
Basketball or football?
No, I'd probably other way around. I'd put football first,
okay.
Then basketball second, then third. I want to see a Tigers World Series in my lifetime. That's all I want. Thanks, Jim Leland.
Yeah, I mean, you're older than you. I remember 1984. No, I really don't.
No, you don't.
So, I would put. Then I'd put the Tigers third. I'd probably put the Lions fourth. I want it for the Tigers and Lions. It's really – I just want to see it once. And I'll say this. This is the flip side of it for the Lions is that the Red Wings draw a million people for a parade, but it's in, you know, it's in June, so of course people are going to go. Pistons, same thing. If the Lions were to somehow – I mean, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth – somehow win a Super Bowl, there would be 3 million people at that parade. I think that Detroit, you know, I think Detroit is a football town first, and I think a Lions Super Bowl would go a long way towards healing the incompetence that has been around this franchise since the Fords took over in the early 60s.
I lived in Detroit in 2006, which was a great season for Michigan football. It was a great season for you know, they were 3 points shy of going to the national title game. The Tigers went to the World Series. It was not a great, it was a typical year for the Lions. They went 3-13. And I got, as a Vikings fan, I wanted to go to the Vikings Lions game. And I ended up getting a number of people giving me tickets because, you know, nobody wanted tickets to that game. And right. So I went down to Ford Field on Sunday morning and I had extra tickets and I thought, well, what am I going to do with these? So I tried to scalp them, no dice. So then I literally tried to give them away. Most of the people who were – there was nobody scalping. There was nobody looking for tickets. Either you had tickets or you were homeless. So I literally went up to homeless people and I said, do you want these tickets to the Lions game? And they said no. And I didn't know what to do with them. I asked the cop. I said, "What? I have no use for these things. What do I do?" So I literally went. I put them on top of a fire hydrant. I put a little like rock on top of them, and I loudly said, "Free tickets here!" And I walked away. I mean, I literally couldn't give them away.
It's not surprising. I mean, a big part of the problem, especially at that time, it's gotten way better now. Was that people would only come into that part of Detroit if they were going to the event, so people just wouldn't hang out.
Yeah, it's another
there.
Problem downtown Detroit. Yeah, it doesn't have sort of the vibrancy.
It's a big, but that's a thing that's changed a lot since 2006.
Yeah.
So that doesn't, I mean, there are people living and working downtown in a way that there just weren't 10 years ago. But yeah, I mean, I would probably, then at fifth, I'd probably put Arsenal, though they caused me a lot of,
another Arsenal
lot of heartburn
fan.
Too. What was that?
Well, because I said our Jets fan was also a big Arsenal fan.
I'm stuck with them too. But yeah, I mean that would probably be my. And then I'd put, you know, the Pistons and Red Wings. I love them. I love both of them. But I've seen them win multiple titles in my lifetime. I've never seen that with a Lions team. I've never seen it with the Tigers team. I've seen it with Michigan football, but still, you know, Jim Harbaugh. Did I mention Jim Harbaugh? Can we mention Jim Harbaugh again?
Kiva, I just got to say, when we do our – and I guess we're a little bit late for it already because the season started. But when we were going to do our 20 supporters in 20 days Premier League, we really got to branch out because everybody we've had is a Arsenal fan, it looks like.
Good luck finding a Stoke fan, guys.
Yeah, I don't know anybody from West Brom, Sunderland. Who else is at the bottom of the Premier League? Stoke? Is Stoke in the Premier League?
Stoke is in the Premier League, and no one will admit to being a Stoke fan.
All right, Akiva, you want to play the roster game?
Yeah, let's play the roster game. America's really eating this up. What I'm going to do here is basically you're going to pick a number. It's not going to be their jersey number, so don't try and solve this game. You're going to pick a number between 0 and 100, and I'm just going to spit out, based on that number, a random Lions game. We'll go rapid fire. We'll get about 3, 4, 5 lines in, and just give me a couple lines about them. They may be the most obscure guy on the team. It may be Matthew Stafford or Megatron, But we're going to test
for the Vikings. I got their backup long snapper.
We got the backup. We like a lot of teams don't even have two long snappers in camp, but the Vikings really tortured Chester. So don't, you know, if you sound like an idiot here, it's okay. It might be, you know, some rookie.
Half of these guys aren't making the final roster. Really
That's
tough.
True. Okay. So give me your first number. You pick a number and I'll you know, I have a formula here.
57, as in 57 was the last year the Lions won a championship.
Very good. Tell me about Isaiah Johnson.
I just looked it up. He went to Georgia Tech. Let's just say he's Calvin's little brother.
Oh, is he really?
I have no idea. Okay, but the problem is when you're going 90 deep on the roster, you know, 43 of these guys aren't making the final roster. And so it's
Listen, we're testing the knowledge here, Chester. We almost should reshoot the first 20 episodes because I like the segment so much. All right, let's do another number. Give me pick
20.
Joseph Fourier.
Joseph Fourier, old stone hands himself at tight end. that's terrible. He's a big tight end. He's a big tight end. Good blocking, and will keep the Lions tradition of Pettigrew and Ebron alive as dropping easy catches over the middle.
Have you guys ever had a great tight end?
Have we ever had a great tight end? I'm trying to think of those teams with the Johnny Morton era. If they actually had a tight end, and I can't, to be honest with you, I can't remember a great Lions tight end.
Yeah. All right, let's do another one. Pick a number.
All right, 55.
All right, 55 it is. Brian Sweet. He's a rookie. He's a rookie from Utah State.
We got a couple rookies on here now. Brian Sweet will not make the team. Ooh. Hot take on Brian Sweet.
It says there's an article in the Free Press about him. That says he's gonna. He has an edge on a practice squad job.
Not a good edge to have. Yeah, it's not a good
sign. Here's how you know he's probably not an NFL superstar. Guess how many followers he has on Twitter? 783. Not a lot for a guy who could be in the NFL next week.
By the way, so I looked at the best tight end in Lions history is Charlie Sanders, who's a Hall of Famer.
Old school. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But
modern.
Modern, there's nobody. David Sloan made one Pro Bowl in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's.
I don't even remember David Sloan.
For in the 97 playoffs against, against the Eagles, where the Lions ended up down 35-0 at the end of the first quarter. 35-7. He caught the seven. Go Lions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. But he literally, that's the only Pro Bowler they've had a tight end in the last 35 years. It's really Brandon Pettigrew is your fourth best tight end ever, and that says it all. Tony Scheffler is sixth best. it's rough at tight end. Joseph Fourier is actually in the top 20.
That's pretty good.
Started two games.
Stone hands. All right, let's end the segment with a bang. One more. Give me one more number.
Let's go six.
Okay, six. Ezekiel Ansah.
So this is the guy who has to have a really great season on the defensive line. In fact, he might be the key player on the defense. If this team is going to make the playoffs this year, it's on the back of Ziggy Ansah having a breakout season.
Okay, so on that note, let's turn to the defense and the defensive line. You mentioned Ansah, and I mean, he had a few sacks last year, but I think he was even better than his numbers. But part of that was because of who he was playing with. And, as you said, they lost Sue. They lost Fairley, who, I don't think he ever met the expectations. But they also lost C.J. Mosley, who was a very valuable part of that D-line. And they brought in Haloti Ngah, who's, been very good in Baltimore for a long time. But he's getting up there in age. So, you said that you thought that the front four is really what made this team last year.
Yeah,
how much are they going to suffer from the losses on the front four this year?
It's just going to be hard to keep up that kind of production, not just because Sue was such a force just by himself, but because he commanded double teams constantly. That made a big, big difference on the edge for this team. And, like you said, they signed how do you pronounce – I always get his name wrong. Haloi Ngah.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's a silent G, right?
I don't know. Anyway.
Although Ndamukong Suh is not exactly easy to pronounce.
You know what? You learn over time, I guess. It's also a lot easier to just yell out Sue, but fair enough. But anyway, they made that signing from Baltimore. And again, it's a guy who's getting up there in age. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the linebackers, and it's going to put a lot more pressure on the corners this year. And you know, that's going to be a big, big challenge. I mean, think about it. By the way, let's remember who the Detroit Lions are. Their best linebacker last year got injured doing a dance. So
I remember that.
DeAndre Levy is going to – another guy that's really going to have to step up this year. And frankly, it's going to require – they're going to have to put up way more points this year. They're going to have to get a lot more out of the offense, because there's no way that the front four on defense can sustain that kind of success.
By the way, between Levy and Schwartz, the Lions have really led the league the last few years in Gentiles with Jewish names. And I'm the reverse, so you know I always keep an eye open for those guys.
Oh well, we appreciate that.
I'm glad Jim Schwartz wasn't a member of the tribe, because he was sort of a jerk. Levy's all right. I mean, other than that dance, obviously, but
yeah. I mean, Levy seems like a good guy. I don't really have anything to say about him. Of course, he's been stuck with the curse of the Detroit Lions, so of course he'd get injured.
Okay,
while
so
dancing.
Let's look at the schedule now. The Lions have a tough schedule this year, which I guess is the reward for going 11-5. And also being, you know, in the tougher division and in what I think is the tougher conference this year. And, you know, I think there's really no easy stretch of this schedule. There's only two or three games, I think, that you can sort of safely chalk up as wins.
It's interesting, that's for sure. I mean, I'll say the biggest thing about this schedule as I went through it earlier today is that I think it's going to be – they're going to be spurts of wins and spurts of losses.
All right, so let's see where those spurts come up. So you start on the road at San Diego. It's not an easy week one.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Of course, it's a 4-5 start in San Diego. But this is going to be one of the games that the Lions are going to do their Lion best on. They're going to dominate San Diego statistically. And, of course, they're going to find a way to lose.
All right. Then road trip continues at the Vikings.
You know what? I have this actually chalked up as a win. I'm sorry, Alex. I think that's their only win in the first 4 weeks.
Yeah, because it really gets tough. Then you come home finally, Sunday Night Football, but against the Broncos.
That's going to be a really hard game to win. Although historically, the Lions have done very well compared to their record in the 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock spots on nationally televised game. They'll have a chance, but I'm going to say that's a loss.
Yeah, and Akiva loves to look at, you know, the primetime. They have, I think, four primetime games plus another London game. So this is a team that the networks think that that fans want to see nationwide, but 1-2, and then it gets even harder. You have, you know, Monday Night Football at Seattle.
Yeah, that's a loss.
Yeah, so 1-3. Now you come home. You know, probably the easiest stretch of the season. And it, by no means is it easy. You know, no gimmies here, really. First, you play the Cardinals at home.
Yeah, I mean, so the Lions are actually due from last year. This was one of the games at Arizona that I can't remember if it was a bad pass interference call. I think it was a bad pass interference call that was – oh, no, it was actually – I take that back. It was a first down that they didn't review in Arizona last year. So I'm going to say the Lions are due from that one, and Lions pull this one out.
Yeah, and it's interesting. They're playing at 4 o'clock, and I'm looking – that's a national game. That's the only Fox 4 o'clock game, Arizona at Detroit. Although New England at Dallas is playing on CBS, so I'm sure that more people will be watching that. But so that's a –
but you wouldn't want to watch the Cardinals and the Lions when you have the opportunity to watch Tom Brady's first game of the season.
Hey, but you know what? That's, you know, that's a lot. That's what is that? Three straight national TV games, and you have the Lions picking up that last one. So that makes it a 2-3, and then they have a chance to get back to 500 at home against the Bears.
Yeah, again, this is a matchup that I like at home. The last 2 years, the Lions have really feasted when they make the playoffs on winning some of these divisional games at home against the Chicagos and Minnesotas, and even against the Packers. They beat them last year. So I'm going to have a win against the Bears.
Yeah, look, that 11-5 schedule, that the Lions swept the Vikings last year, which never happens. They, you know, as you said, they beat the Packers. They really did well in the division. And you have them at 2-0. And now they have a chance for a season sweep against the Vikings again in week 7 and a chance to get above 500.
Yeah, I think they're going to do it, actually. But this is going to be – This is the part where the schedule gets even trickier.
All right, so you have them getting a season sweep against the Vikings before Halloween. They're 4-3. Now they go back to London again. What's that about?
I just can't see the Lions going to London and winning another game, especially how they started off last season, just getting absolutely demolished by Atlanta. I'm going to chalk this one up as a loss in London.
So, yeah. So last year they miraculously came back because everyone was waking up early to eat their cereal and see that, you know, ridiculous coaching debacle in the fourth quarter. But this year you see Andy Reid pulling it out somehow in London for the Chiefs. And so the Lions.
By the way, what did the good people of England do to deserve Andy Reid versus Jim Caldwell?
I don't know, but they've seen a lot of Jaguars the last few years, so they can't complain.
That's true.
So 4-4, considering how tough the schedule is, I think that's not bad.
No, it's not terrible. But this is where – I mean, this stretch of the season is where I think things are going to kind of make a break. I think they come back from the bye week. There's just no chance that they go to Green Bay and beat the Packers. None. I mean, there are a few things that are constant in my lifetime, and losing it at Lambeau Field is one of them. So let's put that one up for a loss.
All right, and after the Packers – you have the great three game home stretch with Oakland, Philly, and then the Packers at home. So and you have the double Thursday game also because of you guys obviously playing Thanksgiving, and then you have the CBS game after that. And by the way, I think Chester said the league loves you, and they put you on. You know, you got four Thursday nights, you got a London game, which is a little bit of a punishment, but some of that's logistical also.
And then we have Thanksgiving, of course.
Right, and then you have the Thursday Thanksgiving. So the Thursday Thanksgiving's locked in, so that doesn't, you know, there's no deep meaning to that. I think part of it is you guys are good enough to be in almost every game, and really that's one of the things the league's looking for because, you know, you put a team without a quarterback, and I'm a Jets fan, and we've certainly been in this scenario recently, and a lot of times, you know, if they can't move the ball and the other team's up 21-3 in the second quarter, and you get crushed in the ratings. So, you know, the Lions are just good enough to be in almost every game.
Yeah, but their biggest name on defense is gone. Their biggest name on offense, Megatron, you know, was really banged up last year. So it's not a guarantee. If Megatron can't stay healthy, I don't know if this is a team that has a national
deal. No, I hear that. But one, they have a lot of fantasy players. So I don't know if the league really considers that. But that's, you know, always a good thing for Monday night because that's the last game.
Oh, yeah. The league definitely doesn't think about gambling.
No, obviously they do. I am curious how much they think about, like, ooh, we get like the Chiefs on Monday night, and everybody's got Jamal Charles, and you know it's going to want to check it out. I would be curious to find out about that. But so, do you think the Raiders game's a win?
So this is going to be one of those games that's make or break this year. I see the Raiders as actually a little bit improved, but those games where West Coast teams have to come out to the East Coast and play the 1 o'clock games are real tough. I'm going to give the Lions the win here too.
And then the Thanksgiving game 4 days later. By the way, we were talking about, like, you know, should the Lions and Cowboys lose the Thanksgiving game in a different podcast? What if the winner of every game got to host it the next year?
So, you know, as a Detroiter, I will say this is a cherished tradition.
Yeah, it's like asking someone from Iowa if they should rotate the primaries and the caucuses. You're not going
to
get the
But it shouldn't be up to Iowa. It should be up to the general people.
You're right, but the problem is that the people who – well, I guess in that case, the problem is that the politicians who need to say that won't say it because they don't want to risk offending the people who make the decision.
Oh, of course. You can't, a politician can't be the one to bring that up.
Yeah, but here, what's the NFL afraid of Lions fans? It's a good question.
It just goes back to one of those things where the owners have these kind of chummy relationships that have gone back forever. I can't see a circumstance, especially now that they have
– No, by the way, we don't think they should either. It was just like we were discussing it. Yeah. I think it actually is one of the nice traditions.
Well, they did add the third one, the nighttime game, I think, so that other teams can get rotated in there.
Right. I thought they added that to put the Jets in.
Right.
That's right. From a different podcast, we discussed
that. People want to see butt fumbles.
Yeah, the Jets, yeah. Listen, we bring the entertainment that Woody Johnson, you know, really thought when they added that third game that would be like the Jets' permanent game, the Thursday night game.
So the next one, we're talking about Thanksgiving against the Eagles.
Eagles, yeah.
So who do you think is going to be starting a quarterback by this point for the Eagles?
Mark Sanchez.
Well, Bradford already took a big hit this weekend.
Did someone look at him?
Oh, he's fine. They were just, you know, him and Terrell Suggs were jawing back and forth at each other. But he's supposedly totally healthy. Just, you know, Suggs, you know, he claimed it was a fair hit. You know, the Eagles did not agree.
So assuming you're right and Mark Sanchez is the quarterback, How good of a chance do you give the Eagles to win a road game with Mark Sanchez as their QB? I would say it's not likely.
Yeah, we have very varying opinions on the Eagles, who we haven't really discussed in detail yet, Chester and I.
Yeah. All right, so they're back above 500, 6-5.
Yep.
Entering December.
And then the third game of this wacky, you know, two Thursday stretch is hosting the Packers on Thursday night, the CBS.
But so this game is actually going to be probably the biggest determinant for the Lions season. You know, last year the Lions were able to beat the Packers. The Packers were a little bit undermanned for that game. They really caused havoc for Aaron Rodgers. Can they do it 2 years in a row? Well, probably not. I'd say the odds are against it. But if the Lions could win this game, they'd be in great shape to win this division. But, of course, they're the Detroit Lions. They're going to lose.
And then you go to – you have a little mini bye. 10 days later, you go to St. Louis.
So what are we now at?
Six and six.
6-6. Okay. So I'm going to actually have this one as a win. I think that having the 10 days and going to St. Louis, I think this is a good chance for the Lions to pull one off on the road.
Yeah, people also have wildly different opinions on St. Louis, ranging from like contenders right. to, you know, who's their QB. And then you guys go to Monday Night Football. National fans are just going to be seeing an awful lot of the Lions. You know, a Matthew Stafford injury, you know, will cost the league, you know, tens of millions of dollars, basically, because there's so much Detroit on the second half of the NFL schedule.
Yeah, definitely. So this is obviously – I just can't see the Lions going to New Orleans and winning.
Last year they went, what, 3-5 at home, New Orleans? But, yeah, but the year before that they were 8-0, so
– yeah.
All right, so 7-7, and now you really have must wins if you're trying to get back to the playoffs.
Right, so I'm going to chalk this one up.
Again, and this is hosting the Niners, yeah.
My favorite NFL franchise. I'd like to extend a personal thank you to the York family from the bottom of my Mason Blue heart for the way that they treated Coach Harbaugh. Because this team has 3-13 written all over it. I mean,
I thought they were going to thank them for sending you Steve Mariucci.
Yeah, thanks for that, guys.
He's a local boy also, though.
He's from Marquette.
Did you know he's friends with Tom Izzo?
I've never heard that before.
Never been mentioned.
And wasn't there a running back, a Hall of Fame running back, who was from Detroit who played the Super Bowl there? I can't remember who that was. They never talked about that on
TV. It was never on. They didn't mention it during the Super Bowl.
Oh, he was named the airplane, the van, something. I don't know. They gotta spend more time on the network talking about this stuff.
Yeah, no one ever talks about these things. Yeah. So I'm going to put the San Francisco game as a win. I mean, I don't know if you guys have really thought how poorly of a run franchise the San Francisco 49ers are. But this is one that chased a coach that – thank you. Thank you again to the York family. And then we're ending with the Bears on January 3rd.
Is this game going to matter?
I think it will.
If you're 8-7, there's got to be some kind of tiebreaker.
Yeah, will it matter for Chicago, possibly? For draft position.
I think the Lions are going to find themselves in a position with the opportunity to go 9-7 and make the playoffs and have to do it in Chicago. Now, this is a place that historically they haven't done well, especially in the heart of winter. I can't see it starting now, to be honest with you. I just can't. I think the Lions are going to end up going 8-8 based on the schedule. And I see the season ending with a playoff elimination loss at the Bears.
Is there any heat on Caldwell if you guys go 8-8?
I think a lot of it depends. I think here's the thing is that this team has so many weapons on offense that they shouldn't be putting up the anemic numbers that they were last year. There's plenty for an NFL team to do. Now, I think the season still comes down to those two divisional games, the week 13 against Green Bay and week 17 against the Bears. I think it all is going to come down to those two games. And I just can't. I can't see Caldwell pulling it out in either one of them. I just think he will be outcoached by anyone, and I think that's going to be the Lions' biggest downfall. And of course, the gelling of the offensive line is gonna make a big difference. They're talented, but they're very young. You know, this team could easily, I think 8-8 is pretty realistic, but I think that they could end up 10-6 or 11-5 again if they. If the offensive line gels this year and the offense picks up their production. I promised you guys a story about the incompetence of of our Lions franchise, so I'd be thrilled to end it with this tonight. So back in 2005, I think you remember a young quarterback from the University of Oregon named Joey Blue Skies, a.k.a. Joey Harrington. Now, this is the great story. This is just shows what kind of a Keystone Cops operation that they run down at Ford Field and in Allen Park where their facility is. So at this time, their then offensive coordinator was going around talking all around town about how to anyone who would listen, his barber, when he was at the racetrack, anywhere, about how this team didn't want Joey Harrington anymore. They didn't think he was good enough, that Mooch didn't really like him, and all this stuff. So, of course, this gets back to the Lions' famed beat reporter, Tom Kowalski, who passed away suddenly, and now, of course, they named the press box after. The press box, of course, that now charges charges writers $150 per game to use wired internet.
That's great.
So anyway, so they what they decide to do is to instead of just saying it's not true and leaving it on, they attack his credibility. They bring out the son of the offensive coordinator on a popular local radio show to discredit him and talk about how there's no way the report's true. They love Joey Harrington. Blah, blah, blah. We know how this story ends. But what's so Lions about this is after Tom Kowalski passed away, the PR guy for the Lions decided to, in his memoriam for Tom Kowalski, say, ha, 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 we were just kidding. Oh, yeah, you caught me in a lie, Tom. Oh, yeah. That's what they decided to do. They apologized after he died.
Ooh.
That's your Detroit Lions for you.
And then they named the box after him. But then they charged you know, reporters to go there. So it's sort of like an FU. Wow.
It is. And they don't have the greatest relationship with the media, which is why they in the recent years they've actually just started to buy their beat reporters who work for the Detroit News to just work for Lions.com and get their own exclusive access. And, of course, get beat to every story by the local media anyway.
So there's definitely some of the window into why Jordan has some of that pessimism even after coming off that that historically great for the Lions 11-5 season. So, Jordan, thanks again for joining us. I think we said Jordan Acker, A-C-K-E-R-M-I, M-I for Michigan, of course, on Twitter, where you can find out all you want about Michigan, the Lions, Arsenal, and other interesting topics. And, you know, I won't say good luck to the Lions this year, of course, because – they're in the Vikings division, but I'll say good luck to Michigan. Other than the game against Minnesota, because you know I hate Ohio State and the rest of the Big Ten. So thanks a lot for joining us. So thanks again to Jordan Acker coming here to talk to us about the Lions today at number 19. We have the Carolina Panthers at 18, but like we did last Thursday, Friday, we're going to skip them, go to the 17th ranked Vikings, so that we can have an NFC North doubleheader, and then we'll talk about Carolina on Tuesday. So Akiva, 17 at the Vikings. That means you're going to be hearing a lot of me for the next few minutes, few hours.
Hours.
What's the max that a podcast can be in length? Do we know?
I'm trying to think like the longest podcast I've ever. You know, there are some really like some history podcasts I have is like each one is like 6 hours. It takes up a lot of space on my. I still use an iPod. I know I'm like in fourth grade.
It's good because I'm planning on going through the history of the Vikings season by season. In fact, before the season, let's talk about 1959, 1960, when Minnesota was talking to both the NFL and the upstart AFL about getting a franchise. Yeah, but actually, on a serious note, we should probably jump right into talking about the Vikings in 2015 if we want this to end anytime soon.
Okay, let's do it.
Akiva, it's time for the 17th ranked Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, this will be a little different than the other ones we've done.
Because in the other ones, I don't talk too much.
No, I just because it's just me and you here, I guess. That's why.
Yeah. We invited some VIPs. Ziggy Wilf, Adrian Peterson, Teddy Bridgewater. Oh, they all said no.
Did you really even ask Teddy Bridgewater? I feel like he's too big time for us now.
Yeah, they have a preseason game right now or today. So the Vikings and the Eagles are the two teams that we have the biggest difference on. I was 8 spots ahead of you. I was 13 on the Vikings. which I thought was actually, you know, reasonable. You were 21. So I'm going to start by asking you a question. You have the Vikings at 21. You have them as the 11th best team in the NFC. So you think they're going to take a significant step down this year. Tell me why.
I mean, part of me thinks a little bit that they were kind of a paper tiger last year. I mean, obviously you're anticipating that Teddy Bridgewater is going to have some real improvement, which I think is very fair from last year. But you're expecting Adrian Peterson to be special when I agree he's going to be fine. But I don't know if he's going to be anything more than just a very good running back. You know, there's outside of that, I just feel like there's not a lot that excites me on the team. But I'm interested in you, you know, pitching me on the team as a whole. I mean, I guess we should do this a little differently than we've done the other ones. I guess we have to. That, you know, I'll ask you questions and you'll answer them.
Sure. Well, you know, before we get into that, this is the interesting dynamic I've seen in the difference between the Vikings sort of perceived by fans and perceived by experts. So, and I'm not saying the experts are right. I'm not even saying they're experts. They might be idiots. They just have a large platform. But so far, every single, and I mean literally every single website I've checked, ESPN, Yahoo, Walters, CBS, NFL.com, every single website I've seen so far that's predicting the season has the Vikings in the playoffs. And I haven't seen a single website that has them worse than 10-6. Now, again, I'm not saying everybody does. I'm sure that, for example, right before the season starts, ESPN comes out, you know, they have like all 50 of their NFL writers give their predictions. I'm not saying 50 of them will have the Vikings in the playoffs. I'm sure a number won't. But my point is that what I've seen so far is all of them, which means at least we can say the majority of national experts see the Vikings as a playoff team this year, which means they're not even a sleeper if everybody thinks so. But yet when you ask the fans, as an example, as we've gone through our 32 fans in 32 days, just about every team that's playing the Vikings at home automatically chalks it down as a win. You know, on the road, some people are like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll lose them. But everybody just sort of sees them as, you know, as a basically, if you think a team's an automatic win at home, then you can say they're basically mediocre. So there seems to be a big dichotomy between sort of the general fans who are focused on one other team and the people with sort of a more national focus.
Yeah, and I do see that. I because they're a team with a young quarterback without an enormous national profile yet, of all the teams basically in the whole league, it seems like they are falling through the cracks a little bit.
Yeah, and their over-under in Vegas is still 7.5, which means, you know, basically a repeat of last year. So, you know, and so again, it seems like, you know, as I said, all these quote-unquote experts think they're winning 10 games, which we'll get to, you know, at the end of my schedule. I think that's more than they're going to win personally. But the gamblers apparently haven't bought that yet because it's still at 7.5.
Well, here's my question. What did they do? And I guess we'll get into this really in depth soon. But what did they do on offense to improve from a team that was outscored by, you know, the Bills and the Panthers and some mediocre offenses last year?
OK, so, you know, I'll say this. First of all, the team literally did not lose a single player of consequence on offense or on defense until they lost Phil Lodeholt to injury in their first preseason game. And we'll get to that. But what they did on offense is they added, you know, a future Hall of Fame running back and, you know, probably the best running back in the game to an offense that was improving last year. And, you know, let me give you some Teddy Bridgewater stats. And you've already heard these because we already filmed, we already recorded our 32 quarterbacks podcast, which we're going to release tomorrow. But, you know, the listeners haven't yet. So I'll just drop a few of those on you. Bruce Feldman said that, pointed out that Teddy Bridgewater completed 72% of his passes the last five games of the year. Four of those were against top 10 defenses. Doug Fair at SI pointed out from Pro Football Focus that Bridgewater completed 82% of his passes under pressure the entire year last year, which was by far the highest figure in the league. The second half of the year from weeks 9 to 17, he was 7th in the league in quarterback rating, ahead of Andrew Luck, ahead of Tom Brady, ahead of Peyton Manning, ahead of Russell Wilson. And then my sort of creme de la creme is Pro Football Focus ranks the quarterbacks. And this was the second half of the year, again, weeks 9 to 17. The number one quarterback in football, obviously, was Aaron Rodgers. Number two was Drew Brees. But number three was Teddy Bridgewater. Again, ahead of Brady, Roethlisberger, Russell Wilson, Romo, Luck, Peyton, you know, every other big name quarterback. So I would say that, first of all, you know, they went 6-6 under Bridgewater, but they improved dramatically as the season went along. He was one of the best quarterbacks in football, both by traditional and advanced stats. And now let's get to the Adrian Peterson piece. Adrian Peterson in his career, and people forget this because, you know, as we said, and I think we discussed this on another podcast, future Hall of Famers at various positions. Peterson's the only future Hall of Fame running back in the game right now. I think part of what we take for granted about him, and this might have been similar to, for example, Barry Sanders in Detroit, how bad the Vikings quarterbacks have been in Adrian Peterson's career. They had the 1 year where Favre came back in 2009. Favre was really good. The Vikings went 12-4. You know, they lost that NFC Championship game to the Saints, you know, thanks to the five turnovers and the 12 men on the field and the late hit from the you know, and all the everything else. But I have a game for you, Akiva, and this game is called Nine Men in the Box, because that's usually what Peterson's faced. And there's nine NFL quarterbacks who have started games in Adrian Peterson's career in Minnesota. I want to see how many of them you can get in order from the most number of starts to the fewest number of starts.
Okay, so that's nine QBs who've played who played with AP.
Yep.
Okay.
Number one with 35 starts. You got a guess?
Okay. Number one with 35 starts, Christian Ponder.
There you go. Not a good quarterback.
Okay. Let's go to number nine, Teddy Bridgewater won.
No, because he's never.
Oh, right. He didn't play that game. He didn't play.
Yeah,
that one.
He played one game last year.
Okay, so Matt Cassel.
Yeah, Matt Cassel's fifth with six.
Okay.
Brett Favre, we already said. He's second Favre on the list. He had the one good year, which we talked about, and then the next year was the disaster.
Just give me him.
All right, Tavares Jackson.
Okay.
Gus Frerotte.
The great Gus Frerotte. That's crazy that they overlapped, yeah.
Donovan McNabb.
Oh, boy. Try to forget that one.
Kelly Holcomb.
Oh, I got a good one. Who's the guy who came in and beat the Eagles or won the Monday night game?
Yeah, but yeah, Joe Webb. But he
Joe Webb.
Yeah, but he actually, Brooks Bollinger.
Former Jet.
Josh Freeman in that disastrous Monday night game. So, and here's a more interesting stat. Only one of those players ever played in the NFL again after they played with Adrian Peterson, which was Tavares Jackson. He started that 1 year in Seattle.
Do you think it could be Peterson, who's a career ender for them and not vice versa?
Yeah, exactly, with big names like that. So my point is that Adrian Peterson has had eight or nine men in the box his entire career. They've had abysmal quarterbacks. Their average team QBR ranking in his career is 23. And you know, again, that's including one really strong year from Favre. They've had really – and they've never been – they had one other year where they were higher than the 20s. They were 17th 1 year. So they've had abysmal quarterbacks, and yet Peterson has run like a Hall of Famer. Let me just get this out of the way. I hate Adrian Peterson. I think he's a scumbag. There was an article in ESPN, the magazine, this week. He's completely unapologetic. He thinks he did nothing wrong, whereas what I think he did is significantly worse than anything that Ray Rice did, that Mike Vick did. You know, you beat a dog, that's terrible, but dogs ultimately aren't humans. You beat a woman, obviously disgusting, terrible. But to beat a child, a defenseless four-year-old, five-year-old, it's despicable what he did. And it's I have internal angst about the fact that I have to root for him. Getting that out of the way.
Yeah, get off your high horse. Yeah. 1 second.
Okay. But as a player, he's been so good with nothing supporting him. And he's also a guy, and you know, he's one of these guys like Michael Jordan who sort of has to invent slights, invent reasons to motivate himself. When he got injured and tore his ACL and everyone said he wouldn't play the next year, you know, he was 8 yards short of the all-time rushing record. And I think this year it's the similar thing. He's 30 years old, which is old for running back, but he's rested his legs for an entire season. You know, he's taken a season off, and I think that he's really motivated. I think he's going to be really incredible. Now, he said he's going to get 2,500 yards this year. That's obviously silly, but the point is that he has, whatever you think about Bridgewater, he's better than the poo-poo platter, the nine men under center that we already listed. So I think that offensively, before we get to the fact that they added, you know, Mike Wallace, who's a deep threat, who's at least alive, which is more than you can say for Greg Jennings. And they have Charles Johnson's their other starting wide receiver, who I heard Matthew Berry mention this on his fantasy podcast. He was a top 10 fantasy wide receiver the last 6 weeks of the year last year. So for whatever that's worth, that means that him and Bridgewater had some kind of decent connection. I'm not saying you should draft him in fantasy, but forget about everything else on the offense. I think that the fact that you had an offense with a quarterback who was really good down the stretch, and now you add the best running back in football who's done that with terrible quarterbacks, I think that's a reason to be really confident in offense. And then I'll say the one caveat is that they did lose Phil Lotholt for the year. He is their right tackle. He's not so good in pass protection, but he's their best run blocker. So, you know, I think that is a negative. And that's something that maybe they'll have to deal with. You know, when he went down, everybody in Minnesota talked about Evan Mathis the way that every other team has talked about Evan Mathis. But, you know, so that's the only player of significance on either side of the football that they lost.
Okay. I mean, you know, I'm still not sold on the skill position players. I want to play a game with you, if that's okay.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to name random Vikings players, and you're going to give me like a fact or your quick one-line opinion about them. But it's going to be completely random, okay?
Okay.
You're up for this game?
Yeah, I mean, I hope I've heard of all of them. I don't know how random you're going to go.
Well, I mean, the whole roster is in play here, so you better know everybody.
There you go.
Okay, pick a number between zero. I'm not doing jersey numbers, so don't get all smart on me. Pick a number between 1 and 99.
I don't know, 74.
74. Okay, tell me about Trey Waynes.
So Trey Waynes, you know, he's their number, the 11th pick, I think, overall, their number one pick at cornerback. I'll say this about him. First of all, Mike Zimmer is known as the cornerback whisperer for the fantastic job he did specifically in the secondary and with corners.
By the way, that's better than your previous coach, who was the little children whisperer.
Yeah, no comment. But look, so, you know, I'm going to use this to talk about Zimmer for a second. Last year, he came in with, I think, the 31st ranked defense. He turned him up to number 14. Cornerbacks are his specialty. Trey Waynes, I haven't been impressed with him so far in the preseason. And you know, from what I've seen, it seems like he's getting beat a lot. But I'll also say this, when reading previews of teams that drafted 8, 9, and 10 this year, but like by Bill Barwell, for example, he's mentioned the fact that each of those teams he thought should have drafted Trey Waynes, which leads me to believe that he and other, you know, football experts I respect think that he was a good pick at number 11. He's with the best coach for cornerbacks. So I think he might start, you know, as a nickel. I don't know if he's going to be a starting cornerback at the start of the year. But Captain Munnerlin, who was their big free agent they added from Carolina last year, he's actually a threat of being even cut. He's not going to make the team, which I think indicates the fact that they have a lot of depth at cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, in general, cornerback is really in the top two or three positions in terms of difficulty as a rookie in the modern NFL. You know, wide receivers kind of just have to catch the ball. You know, players like Revis and Richard Sherman didn't necessarily start off their careers. You know, I saw Revis's whole rookie season. You know, the better players like Owens and Moss were beating him, you know, pretty relentlessly in his rookie season. All right, so give me, let's do this a couple more times if you're up for it. Give me another number.
Sure, 53.
All right, 53. Tell me about Kevin McDermott.
Oh, my God. I don't know who that is.
He's the long snapper. Oh, is he the backup long snapper?
No, our long snapper is Cullen Loeffler.
Oh, well, he's competing with Kevin McDermott.
All right, Kevin McDermott. I just clicked on his name.
What's he got about him?
He's a backup long snapper.
Listen, you picked the worst guy on the team. All right, give me another one. Give me another number.
All right, 12.
Okay, number 12. Ryan Whalen.
Ryan Whalen?
He's on your team. It says he has 4 years of experience, which is kind of
crazy. Oh, Ryan Whalen. Yeah, he's the white guy. Yeah. Ryan Whalen is a white wide receiver.
Has he played yet? Why does it say he has 4 years of experience? That's weird for like a rookie type of player.
Well, he's not a rookie.
Oh, he did play. Oh, he just didn't play for you. Okay, fine.
Yeah, he's been in the NFL. I think that he went to Stanford maybe?
So I guess that everyone who went to Stanford got a job with the Colts initially. He actually had 24 catches from 2 touchdowns. In 2013, but he didn't really do anything last year. Somehow he has 2 fumbles and only 2 receptions last year. Maybe he was a punt returner.
But if he makes a team, he's going to be a special teams guy. He's not a relevant part of the offense.
You want to do any more of these?
Sure. Give me number 1.
Okay, number 1, Danielle Hunter. I assume this is not the first female player in the NFL, even though it's spelled the way women spell it.
So this isn't even like Daniel Manning on the Colts. This is literally D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E.
Yeah, Danielle.
Danielle Hunter. She's very attractive.
It does sound like a model's name. A model with 6'5", 252.
No, Bill Simmons has his Lindsey Hunter All-Stars.
Yes.
Yeah. Danielle Hunter is an obvious member of the Lindsey Hunter All-Stars.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, I mean, Danielle's a hot name in general. Shout out to all my friends named Danielle. Yeah, I don't know who he is. I'm looking here. He's their 7th defensive end, number 99.
No, I feel like you should know 100 guys on this roster.
He was a 3rd-round draft pick this year.
So you should definitely know him.
Yeah, bad job.
Let's do one more. Give me another.
Sure. Number 93.
93. Taylor Heinicke. He's a quarterback on your team. Heinicke, maybe? How do you pronounce it?
Heinicke, that's another Minnesota kind of name, but I don't know who that is.
Well, you only have like 4 QBs on your roster. I feel like you should know
No. There's Teddy Bridgewater, Sean Hill's the backup, and then Mike Kafka is
the... Yeah, but what about number 4? What if Bridgewater and Hill go down?
So are we assuming that Heinicke is going to be signed to the practice squad?
I mean, I don't know anything about him. That's why I'm asking you.
He's a college free agent this year from Old Dominion. I don't know. I have no comments. You can't ask me about 4th string quarterbacks.
Wait, listen, you're picking the numbers. All right, let's try and end this on a good note, because I feel like this segment has some legs if we could find someone who knows something about their team.
Oh, shots fired. All right. In honor of Kirby Puckett, I'll say number 34.
All right, number 34. David Yankee.
Oh, my God. This is going in the wrong direction.
This is great. I'm going to keep going until you've heard of someone on the Vikings.
David Yankee.
David Yang, and you should definitely hate him. I mean, his name is Yankee.
Yeah, I don't. He's another Stanford guy. Why are they bringing all these Stanford guys? He was a fifth round pick.
I mean, this is a guy. This guy was a chance to start.
He does. I mean, I have not heard of him. I mean, he's a guard. They're starting. No, I don't know who this guy is. I have no comment. Sorry. Bad job by me.
We might have to cut this whole segment out.
Yeah, it really lays waste to any claims I have on any expertise or knowledge about the Vikings.
Okay, one more. We got to do it. We're not stopping until we finish. Until we finish strong. Give me a number.
Fine. Number four.
Number four. Brian Robeson.
All right. Brian Robeson.
Paul Robeson's great-great-grandson.
Probably not, because he spells it with an I.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, that would be the only issue there. You know, I think that Robeson is one of, you know, they have a really, really deep defensive line, and Robeson is part of that. And, you know, now I'm going to just sort of talk about the whole defensive line, but between him and Sharif Floyd, who's emerging, and Everson Griffin, who they signed to that huge contract a year ago, which seemed like a bad idea, but really paid off, actually. Linville Joseph, a former Giant. I think they have a really strong defensive line across the whole line. Anthony Barr is going to be, you know, an outside linebacker this year. He's going to create absolute havoc. He's probably the guy I'm most excited about on the defense. I guess also Harrison Smith, but this defense overall, and I'm looking at some of these previews, and they have the Vikings at four stars at every single defensive position: defensive line, linebacker, secondary. And I haven't seen a team yet that's like that. Now, we haven't got to a couple of the best defenses in the league, but I just, you know, it's just a defense that doesn't really seem to have a lot of holes. I said they jumped from 31 to 14 in Zimmer's first season.
Well, can we use points? I hate yards for, you know, reasons that I don't think I need to explain to you, but, you know, when you're winning big in games, other team gains a ton of yards. When you don't move the ball, the other team doesn't necessarily get a ton of yards, even if they get a lot of points. So a yard, you know, the Chargers once were first in yards gained and first in yards allowed and missed the playoffs. So I'm not a big yards fan. Let's talk about points. So they were 10th in points allowed, which is even better.
Yeah, well, I guess that's even better. There you go. And offensively, I noticed also they were 27th in yards, 20th in points. So, so both those are favorable to them. So sure, let's talk about points. They were a top 10 defense, and I think they're going to get better. You know, all that having been said, I'm a little bit cautious about a lot of this preseason hype. Look, first of all, I'm a guy who loves to be negative on my teams. I've hated the Twins for the last – I mean, even when they were good, I hated the Twins because their front office is so regressive. The same thing with the Timberwolves. I was convinced that Flip Saunders would find a way to screw it up and not take Carl Anthony Towns. Now that they did, I'm sure that him and Wiggins will play together for 4 years, both be injured all the time, and then we'll bolt Minnesota. You know, I've hated every Vikings coach since Danny Green. Zimmer's the first one I was ambivalent about it. I had no opinions, and I was really impressed last season. And so, you know, I hate being optimistic about this team. And with the Vikings, look, the ceiling for the Vikings is that they'll have a great season, be favored in the NFC Championship, and lose in devastating fashion.
The ceiling is they win the Super Bowl. Teddy Bridgewater is named regular season and Super Bowl MVP.
No. But this isn't a normal
thing. And Adrian Peterson and his son hug on the podium.
Son? He's got like seven kids through like five
all of his
women.
Sons hug on the podium.
Yeah.
And they make up and that's again, the Hollywood ending.
You're talking about the Vikings. The Vikings ceiling is be favored in the NFC Championship game and find a way to lose. 98, of course, 2000, we had the Gary Anderson game, the 41-0 debacle against the Giants, 2009, the Brett Favre 12 men on the field, et cetera. That's the goal for this team. They will not win a Super Bowl. That's an established fact. They will not win a Super Bowl. The Twins will win a World Series again in my lifetime. I'm sure of that. The Minnesota Wild will win at some point. The Vikings will never win a Super Bowl. I don't need to pull out all these stats about their history, but and this is even taking into account that the last 10 years haven't been good. They've still made the playoffs more than I think any team in history, except for like three. I think like the Cowboys and the 49ers. They always make the playoffs. They always find a way to lose. That's sort of the tradition. And, you know, that's why they're very similar, I think, to like the Suns and the Jazz and the NBA and the Red Sox pre-2004 in baseball. And why I hate when they're compared to teams like Cleveland or Detroit. I mean, those or you're like the Chicago Cubs. There's a difference between the teams that are always good and always find a devastating way to break your heart and the teams that are just bad. They're just pathetic. You know, the Vikings aren't the latter. They're the former. So, again, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. Teddy Bridgewater will never win a Super Bowl. Adrian Peterson will never win a Super Bowl unless he goes somewhere else at the end of his career. But the goal is, can we get back to the playoffs? Can we be exciting again? And I'm confident about that.
Okay, let's go to the schedule, Chester.
Jumping right to the schedule. All right. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know how you guys got this spot, but you guys open on Monday Night Football because the whole league is waiting to see you and the Niners.
But first, so that late Monday Nighter is the Chris Berman game. That's not a good spot.
I'll tell you what, it's not a good spot, and it usually has gone to the AFC West teams the last bunch of years.
Well, it's got to be a West Coast team because it's starting so late. Yeah.
That being said, like Chargers, Chiefs, you know, that would work better than like this Niners, Vikings. This game, you know, when it's normally played, only goes to Minnesota and San Francisco. This is not a game that people would be excited about. But I guess you have one team that maybe is the team on the rise this year, and one team that's clearly everyone is anticipating the team who's going to regress to, you know, maybe 0-16. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm talking about the Vikings. They're going down.
I can't remember if it's the last time they played, but a recent time they played was in 2009 on Erev Yom Kippur when Brett Favre had that miracle play, you know, the last play of the game to jump to was it either 3-0 or 4-0 when we saw that that was a magical season. They've probably played since then, I imagine. Look, you know, San Francisco's a really bad team. I expect them to go in and beat them handily. But the important thing to remember is that week one in the NFL doesn't prove anything. Last year, San Francisco was a Super Bowl contender. The Cowboys, people thought, might have the worst defense in history. San Francisco went into Dallas and destroyed them in week one. And look what happened the rest of the season. The Cowboys were one of the best teams in the league. San Francisco imploded. I think the year before, Tennessee, or maybe it was last year also, did Tennessee beat Pittsburgh in week one?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was the year before when Tennessee ended up winning like four games.
Yeah, there were some really weird results that we've already gone through in the schedule from last season, week one.
Yeah. So week one, you know, yeah, the Vikings beat St. Louis 34-6 last year. Although, you know, St. Louis won 6-10. The Vikings were better than them. Yeah. But
well, the Jets won a game week one last year.
Yeah. So
the Jets seem to win week one almost every year.
Again, you know, having said that, I think that all these experts are predicting to go 10-6 or 11-5. I think before I actually go game by game on the schedule, I think I'm leaning closer to 9-7, just because I'm a little pessimistic about all the hype. And 9-7, I don't think makes the playoffs. It could. So I'm not sold that they're a playoff team. I think that they should be a playoff team. You know, I'm just not sold that they'll do it.
Well, we'll get to the playoffs in a minute.
But I'm giving them a win in week one.
All right. You're hosting the Lions.
These division games are always tough to predict, which is something that every one of our idiots.
All their games are easy, right?
Yeah, look, traditionally,
I know exactly what's going to happen when they play the Rams.
Look, traditionally, my assumption always was, all right, we split with the Packers, we split with the Bears, we beat the Lions twice. I think I'm going to say that we'll split with the Lions this year, so I'll give us the win in week two at home.
Okay, now 2-0, and you host the Chargers.
See, it's annoying, because I don't want to be jumping out to some hot start.
No, do it. Listen, don't you know, prior success has no indication of future failure.
Well, Adrian Peterson set the all-time rushing record against the Chargers. I was actually at that game. That's a lie. That's a lie. I was at a Vikings Chargers game, but not that one. But in my memory, it was that one. So that's all that matters. See, it's so weird, this home field advantage thing, because, you know, they're playing for the second year in a row at TCF Stadium where the Gophers play. I've always been, and when the Twins moved from the Metrodome, which was a terrible place to watch baseball, the seats didn't even face home plate. When they moved to Target Field, I advocated, and I'm sure I was the only one, I said, let's keep the Metrodome for the playoffs, because the Metrodome has been historically fantastic for the Twins in the playoffs. Other teams, all of a sudden, they start dropping fly balls. Like, especially National League teams can't see the ball in the ceiling because they're not used to it. It was always, you know, the loudest stadium in baseball and in football. It used to be the loudest. Now I think people say Seattle's the loudest, but it makes logical sense to me that a stadium with a roof should be loud because it keeps the sound in. So I miss the Metrodome as a competitive advantage. Hopefully down the line, you know, they'll have the same thing from this new stadium. Who knows? And this year, in theory, they could have the advantage at the end of the season that the Packers have of the weather and all that. But again, it's not like it's not like this is a team that necessarily is designed for the cold. I mean, maybe defense and running game, maybe they are. I don't know. It's not like players are used to it because they've only had the cold for one season and this will be the last, you know, so I don't know what kind of home field advantage they're going to get. I think San Diego is a similar team to them. You know, a team that I think is slightly above average, a playoff contender. I don't know. I guess I'll give them a win. That's at home. Make them 3-0. What the hell?
Okay, and then
but to be clear, overall through three games, I think they're going to go 2-1. But just in each of these games, I think they'll be a slight favorite. So if they're, you know, if they're a 3 or 4 point favorite in each game, it's hard to pick one of them that they're going to lose.
Okay, and then last game before the very early bye at Denver.
All right, so this one's an easy loss. I love Peyton Manning. I still think he's, you know, the greatest football player of all time. We're not going to win on the road at Denver. But you know what? If we're 3-0 at Denver's, I'm sure going to be 3-0 or 2-1 at the worst. That game might be shown to a big chunk of the country at 4:00.
Oh boy, I'll be sure to go out then. Hosting,
I think I'm going to be in the Holy Land. I think I'm going to be in some undisclosed location at that time, where you will be as well. So maybe we can watch it together.
Oh, sweet. Okay. hosting the Kansas City Chiefs after the bye, and everyone knows you don't beat Mike Zimmer when he has 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah, Andy Reid, he's the big bye guy, right? I don't know if that works for the other team as a bye. That's three in a row against the AFC West. By the way, when I've been editing these podcasts, every time we ask a guy to predict the game, he always starts with a, and I always have to edit out all the uhs.
It's a hard question, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to leave in this though. You know, this is similar to San Diego. just because it's at home. See, whatever. Fine. Win 4-1. Ooh, what am I doing?
Okay. And then you finish with the Lions already. Well, you know, before you start with the Bears and a month before you even meet the Packers once.
Yeah, that's interesting. I said they'll split with the Lions, so they lose here.
Okay, and then in Chicago?
Yeah, so if they're going to split, if they're going to sweep a team in the division, it would be the Bears. But I'll say that they're just going to split with them as well. So this will probably be a loss if I'm making that argument. So 4-3.
And then you host the Rams.
The Rams are garbage. We beat them 34-6 last year. Now we have Sean Hill on our side. That's got to be a win. 5-3.
Okay. And then you guys go to Oakland and finish up your AFC West.
I got to say, if you were to sort of say the ideal way that you would play the four AFC West teams, I think it's like this. On the road at Denver and Oakland, because Denver you assume is a loss anyways, and at home against San Diego and KC, the two sort of stronger but beatable teams in the division. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I mean, a team would probably rather go to Kansas City and Denver and then host KC.
Oh, but nobody likes going to Denver because
I was thinking like teams would rather like the shorter trip. So you go to KC and Denver and you host the California teams. To go out there.
Yeah.
Really have a say in where you go and you know.
No, so. I'm just saying, I think it sort of plays out in a nice way. See, now I have them going 3-1.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe the league is just setting up the Vikings to make that Super Bowl.
Am I going to predict them to lose to the Raiders? You know, I've already been on record of my opinion about Derek Carr. I mentioned that Teddy Bridgewater was the third best quarterback in the league according to Pro Football Focus the second half of last year.
Derek Carr was the second best?
Yeah, Derek Carr was 34th, dead last.
Oh, my God.
So
he was in Geno land, Bortlesville.
He was below Bortles and Geno, actually. So, yeah, so he was really bad.
In Oakland, win?
Sure, 6-3. Oh, man.
6-3. And then you got, oh, boy, now forget it. This game's not even going to be at 1 o'clock anymore. Fox is going to have to protect this one and move it to 4:15.
Boy, Aaron Rodgers, other than the Brett Favre year when we swept them and spanked them, and then, of course, the Adrian Peterson year in 2012 when we also beat them, and Adrian Peterson had over 200 yards in both games, I think. Well, I think he had like 210 in the first game and 157 or 175 in the second game. You know, the weakness of the Packers is their run defense still, I think. I want to predict a split with the Packers. But it's idiotic for me to say the Vikings are going to be 6-3 and beat the Packers at, you know, whatever. We're not going to be 7-3. That's not going to happen. So, again, I think there's a loss somewhere earlier there that I picked them as a win because it's like a 60-40 proposition and you lose some of those. But this one I'm going to say is a loss. We're 6-4.
Okay. You go to Atlanta.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the schedule. They could really go on a losing streak here.
We kind of said this when we did Atlanta. Atlanta stinks. Atlanta this year, like, it wouldn't shock me if they were just awful. I know people like their coach, so I guess the coach could turn around, but
yeah, I mean, they have a really good offense.
The roster does not impress me.
You know, this is a stupid thing to say, but I was going to say a loss because I sort of, my default is to assume that road games are losses unless it's, you know, a mediocre team or a really bad team even. But then I'm giving them like a 4-game losing streak, and that's the wrong reason to do it, but I think I'm going to give them a win here. So they're 7-4, and they need it because the next two are really tough.
Yeah, so then you host the Seahawks, 7-4 Vikings, 9-2 Seahawks,
yeah,
in Minnesota, complete chaos. The stadium's probably even full.
But yeah, the stadium should be full, but right now that one has more tickets available on StubHub than any other previous game. I guess just because it's so far off, maybe.
Yeah.
In TCF Stadium, I think they only fit like 50,000.
Oh, really? And the tickets are cheap. I noticed they have one of the cheapest tickets in the league right now available.
Yeah, you know, it's not next year they'll move into the new stadium. Right now, it's like you want to go sit in the cold in December in Minnesota. Mm. But look, if they're 7-4 and Seattle's 9-2 coming to town, those tickets will be more expensive. Although, and I've tried to tell my friends who sell tickets this professionally, I won't mention their names on the podcast because I don't know if it's advertising or you know.
We're open for advertising if they want.
But I don't know if it's advertising or causing them problems with the IRS. But I've tried to say to them that every time I go to a Vikings game and whenever I'm home in Minnesota during the season, I go to a Vikings game with my dad. We always buy tickets from a scalper right before the game. And we never pay more than face value. So even when the Vikings have been good, or much more than face value, I'll say. So I don't know what that says about Minnesotans, but it's never been clear to me how it's a good profit to be selling Vikings tickets. But what these guys tell me is, yeah, but they sell the tickets to fans of the other team who are traveling there, and they're not going to buy a ticket the day of the game from a scalper. They're flying there. They're booking a hotel. Totally. They're buying it online on StubHub or whatever. So that having been said, this has got to be a loss. I got to be realistic here.
Okay. And then you guys, a very tough week. One of the tougher weeks in the league this year. You guys go to Arizona on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah. So I'm convinced Arizona is not going to be that good. I've been convinced by Bill Barnwell and a number of others. They had really bad luck when it came to injuries at quarterback, but they had really good luck in terms of a lot of other things, you know, turnovers and score differential and their Pythag and things like that. And also, we've had really good luck against Arizona the last few years. I mean, Tavares Jackson went and lit up Kurt Warner the year that the Cardinals ended up going to the Super Bowl. Although, you know, there's no players on either team who are around from then, so that's irrelevant. Yeah, but, you know, on short rest, this is going to be a loss again. And that puts them at 7-6, and they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so then do you guys get the split hosting the Bears?
Yeah, there's no way the Bears sweep us. If I had to put odds on it, I would say, like, 40% we sweep the Bears, 40% we split with them, 20% they sweep us. So, you know, I've already given them a win, the Bears, so this one's definitely I'm giving to the Vikings.
Okay, two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning comes to town against future five-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. Oh, sorry, Bridgewater's probably hurt. This is a Sean Hill game.
Boy, really, shots fired.
No, okay, fine. No, Bridgewater, Eli, really the matchup we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, that is the matchup we've all been waiting for. So, Eli Manning, excuse me, and let me just get the numbers up because he's had a comically terrible career against the Vikings, like 3+ turnovers every time he plays them, but it's usually in New York. So let me get the number so I have it. Yeah, against the Vikings, he has, for his career, 4 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. This doesn't show his how many fumbles he's lost, but it's been a lot. His quarterback rating is 55. The only team he's been worse against in the NFL is the Baltimore Ravens. So his yards per game is 170. He's really, really bad against the Vikings, Eli, which is part of the reason why I think he's so bad. So we're definitely going to beat them.
Okay, and then is this the last game for all the marbles to make the playoffs?
So here's the thing. They're 9-6. The big question is, the Packers, do they have the one seed locked up?
Well, maybe they're 4-11. I don't know.
It would be sort of a cheap way to get to that 10th win. But if the Packers have it locked up, which is possible, you know, they've made no qualms with the fact that they rest guys. You know, that was the famous game where they beat the Lions, you know, 55-52. In that
no, the Bears. Matt Flynn threw like 18,000
touchdowns. No, that was against the Lions with Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford and Flynn both had.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
This is the thing. The Packers play the Seahawks at home in week 2, which I think is really helpful because, and they play the Cowboys at home in week 14, which means that the teams that they're most likely to be competing for the one seed, they will have already beaten. And so they will have the tiebreaker. So in other words, if the Packers are 12-3, Seattle's 12-3, or well, okay, in that case, they have to win. But if they have a game up on the team, they've clinched because they have the tiebreaker. So, you know, normally I'd say we split with the Packers because we win at home and we lose on the road. Mm-hmm. But we've actually, you know, we've been very close to them on the road. Often, as I said, you know, the Adrian Peterson year, the Brett Favre year, and I think that there's enough likelihood that the Packers might be resting everyone that it would allow us to get the win. So I thought we were going 9-7, but here I'm actually weaseling us into 10-6 because of a bullshit Week 17 win against the resting Packers team.
Oh boy, okay.
I hate to do this. I really want to say 9-7, but you know what? If the guys from the Bills and the Dolphins and the Saints, if they can all say 10-6, you know, if the guy from the Titans can say 9-7, please, I'm allowed to say 10-6. Again, I'm not saying anything that most experts aren't saying.
Well, you know, I mean,
you're disgusted. You're disgusted.
No, I mean, listen, you know, you're right to be optimistic. You know, the Vikings really haven't given you much joy, but maybe they could start this year.
Well, yeah, but again, you have them as the 11th ranked team in the NFC. You think that they're worse than the Lions and they're worse than New Orleans and, you know, and the Bears and the Panthers and the Eagles and everybody and, you know, the Cardinals and the Rams. You have them worse than everybody in the NFC.
I mean, listen, I feel like there's a tier of teams that aren't winning the Super Bowl this year. And, you know, you guys might be in that tier with the Rams and the Cardinals and the Eagles.
Shots fired at the Eagles. Yeah, the Eagles are the other team that we have.
No, the Eagles aren't winning the Super Bowl, please.
I'm not saying they're winning the Super Bowl, but I have the Eagles at... Where do I have him at? I have him at 7.
They gave up 400 points last year. Show me a little bit of defense first, the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know why I have him at 7. We're going to have to wait for Shamir for this one. Next week, we'll turn to the Eagles. I think I'm too high on the Eagles. Yeah, I think you're too low on the Vikings. And again, I'm expecting the worst to happen because this 9-7 is more likely than 10-6. I understand why everybody nationally is excited about them. I just, you know, I'm still hesitant. As you said, look, the receivers, Cordell Patterson was incredible as a rookie. Last year, everybody was hyping him. He was everybody's fantasy darling, and he was a complete non-entity. So now we're not even relying on him. But I think somebody needs to emerge as a star. As I said, they need to get something from wide receiver. They have potential both in Patterson and Charles Johnson, in Mike Wallace, I need to defend him for a second. I was saying Pete Prisco at CBS loves Mike Wallace. He thinks he's a superstar. He thinks he's gotten a bum rap. I'll say this about him. He wasn't bad in Miami. The issue in Miami was that they gave him an idiotic contract. They gave him $60 million coming out of Pittsburgh, which he never deserved. He was a downfield threat, but he wasn't, you know, a superstar. And so when they paid him to be a superstar and he wasn't, they got upset with him. But he was fine. He had 70 catches, 900 yards, 10 touchdowns. In fact, I'm looking. His numbers in Miami were almost identical to his numbers in Pittsburgh. His last year in Pittsburgh, he had 64 for 836 and 8 touchdowns, 119 targets. Last year in Miami, 67 for 862 and 10 touchdowns, 115 targets. I mean, his numbers were identical. And that was with whatever you think about Ryan Tannehill. He's probably not as good as Ben Roethlisberger. So, you know, I don't know why people are so low on him. You know, the guy we had for the Dolphins said, which is insane to me. Sorry, Ellie Gray, if you're listening.
Oh, boy. I started insulting the Dolphins, and now I'm like, my life's been threatened.
Yeah, he's got upset with you on the Facebook.
Not just him. A lot of people are mad at me.
Well, but the thing is, you weren't saying that Dolphins fans are like bad people. You were saying Dolphins fans aren't even fans. They're just like, they don't care. Like, whatever Mike Wallace is, he's an upgrade on Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings won't be in the NFL next year. His career is over. Greg Jennings, hot take here.
Warning. Hot take approaching.
Put it down on the board. Greg Jennings will not have 40 catches, 500 yards, or 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, no, but Wallace was league average last year. Wallace wasn't great either.
Well, again, he had double-digit touchdowns. That's got to be worth something. He wasn't fantastic, but, you know, and Teddy Bridgewater, his weakest, you know, part of his game is throwing the ball down the field, which is Mike Wallace's strength. But, you know, the main thing I'm going back to is the fact that Adrian Peterson has been so good in his career with such crap at quarterback. And the one year that they had anything above average at quarterback, they went 12-4. And even when Christian Ponder just didn't shit the bed per his traditional standard, he had 2,000 yards. So I think that Peterson's going to have a really good year. I think I'm going to be really torn. You know, I will not let my children wear their Peterson jerseys. My Peterson jersey I will not wear yet. But you know what? If we're 7-3 after we beat the Packers in that game and Peterson already has 1,200 yards, oh, the hypocrite is going to come out.
All right. All right.
You know what? We're all rooting for laundry at the end of the day. You know, honestly, these guys can be jerks. These guys can be steroid users. I'm not saying my kids should emulate them off the field. But look, Adrian Peterson's really, really good. And I think he's going to be really good this year. And I think when you add him to a quarterback that was really good in the second half of last year, you know, we'll see.
All right.
How terrible was this podcast for non-Vikings fans?
No, I think it was good. Just like the last 2 minutes, my dad came in. So see if he like if there's anything like him telling me that my butt crack is showing or anything like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Does your dad have any comments on the Vikings this year?
Yeah, he left the room. I don't know.
It reminds me of the Seinfeld line when George says he never said I love you to anyone except the dog who licked himself and left the room.
Yeah.
I told your dad I love the Vikings, so he licked himself and left the room. So on that terribly awkward note, thanks to me for visiting today to talk about the Vikings. I can be found on Twitter, of course, at HChester99. Akiva can be found at Keeve, K-E-E-V-26. Akiva, was that enough Vikings talk for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, you know, I'll hear more about them when we do our Super Bowl preview podcast in a few months.
Yeah. So, well, I have good news and bad news for you. The good news is that tomorrow we're going to talk about the 18th-ranked Carolina Panthers. So hopefully the Vikings won't get mentioned too much.
No, they probably won't get mentioned at all. Are they playing them this year?
Yeah, I don't think so. But the bad news is that on Wednesday, we have a special halftime intermission podcast. Before we get to Team 16, we're going to talk about all 32 teams' quarterback situations. You and I are going to rank the 32 quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think that means that Teddy Bridgewater is going to be up for conversation again.
Well, hopefully very early, like 30 seconds.
Oh, well, I was thinking very early because we might go in reverse order and start right at the top.
Oh, number one, Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, tied for first with Aaron Rodgers, let's be realistic. All right, so thanks again for joining us. Everyone have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow to talk about the Carolina Panthers.